Welcome to the Humanist Union of Madison monthly meeting. Our speakers today are Barbara Park and Ingrid Loss, talking about the women's marches in Washington and Madison on January 21st. We'll start with Barbara Park.
Well, it was an amazing march. There were, 10,000 people there, ultimately?
75 to 100,000?
Oh, 100,000. Sorry, I get that. I always get my thousands wrong. Anyway, we started out the morning at a program called Leading Locally, which was helping Mocheeks got going, helping kind of organize people into their interests, and then coming up with goals that they could actually do in a short amount of time. Nothing pie in the sky, but just achievable goals. When we left there, I was supposed to meet the Raging Grannies at the Capitol, ultimately. So I headed down the parade route, going in the wrong direction, trying to kind of connect with the beginning part of the parade, and ran into a friend from work who said, "Don't bother going any further." She said she'd gone one more block and could not move. So I just stood there and let the parade come to me, and then proceeded on to the Capitol. Some of the grannies had a hard time getting there. They, one gal, the buses were all full coming into town, and she finally just stuck out her thumb and thumbed a ride to get down to the Capitol. And I heard later that there were people stopping at corners and saying, "I can take two, I can take three," to get people downtown to the rally. The grannies went fairly late in the program. There were lots of wonderful speakers. We were right up at the front of the Capitol. They had a couple of young women who told their stories and read poetry that they had written. Just absolutely breathtakingly wonderful. It was cold. It was kind of a raw day. By the time the grannies got to sing, people had been standing, listening to these good speeches, but standing for a long time. And I think they were ready to participate. So the grannies sang several songs, and the last one was a participatory one, and the crowd all sang. That was just a thrill to be up there and leading these thousands of people singing with us. I think it was, it was a real high point of for me, and I think for a lot of the grannies. So it was an amazing event.
Thank you, Barbara.
Ingrid.
I just opted to drive because by that time it was going to be impossible to get a reasonable plane ticket. And I was kind of curious about what we tend to call flyover country. Like, what is it about these people that they saw in Trump, and that even apparently if polling was to be believed, maybe they didn't feel comfortable admitting to people that they were going to vote for Trump? Or what is it about this urban-rural disconnect? And I thought maybe if I drive through rural parts of Indiana and Ohio and Pennsylvania, I'll pick up on something there. To be honest, when it was all said or when I was on the road, it's not as though I pulled off of the highway that much. I didn't see that much of this quote-unquote flyover country that necessarily helped me explain why so much of the population didn't see the world the way a lot of us did. And in fact, the majority of us who did indeed vote for Hillary Clinton and not Donald Trump.
Did you find a parking place when you got there?
I ended up doing a last-minute search.
Okay. Yep.
I'm sorry?
We learned that it's a bad cable.
Oh.
We were having a side conversation.
Okay, all right.
So this cable is nada.
Okay.
So we will get that.
Well, now we know. And I'm sorry, now I'm having a problem with my primary program here, which is annoying, but I'll just use a different imaging program in that case. So I guess technical issues are the soup du jour. just takes me a moment.
Yeah, my cousin took her 14-year-old down to the march.
Oh,
it was important for her to be there, so they came down from Cambridge, Mass.
Nice. How did they enjoy it?
Or they loved it.
Yeah.
Although they said it was more of a stand than a march.
I'm sure.
It was. That's a large part of my story, too. Or, I mean, not that. But, yeah, I mean, I never really did find the main stage. Like, nobody really knew where they were going or anything like that. back to finding parking. All what I did, I did get there the day before, and actually two nights before, because I thought, well, I want to be there for the inauguration too, just to poke around. And I got a ticket online, because you can get those tickets really easy through the Trump campaign, and I've been on their mailing list, and it's like, all right, sure. But I ended up not getting down there in time to actually, you know, be part of the festivities, you know. It's a strange term to use for someone like me. But, you know, when the actual inauguration was taking place, because I ended up talking for a while to the person who I was staying with, the spot I got through Airbnb. But who's a really interesting young woman. She's a journalist in the D.C. area, but she's originally from Pakistan. So, of course, with the travel bans and that sort of thing starting to, you know, those things starting to drop, she was worried and chose not to go down because, frankly, she wasn't sure if, you know, she would be targeted as somebody, like, if she went home to Pakistan to visit family. You know, would she be allowed to re-enter the country? Okay, and I've just got to hit slideshow here, and then I can. So in any case, it was a very different energy. This is from the Women's March, and this is like people starting to line. I don't know, does this help?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, so I'll just backtrack a little bit and say that I did catch things as people were leaving the Trump inauguration, and that was an interesting thing to see because it almost felt solemn. I mean, I realized that there was maybe more excitement in the air and energy in the air as people were arriving and that type of thing, but by the time things had kind of broken up and people were just filing out, you didn't see a lot of like people looking that enthusiastic to actually be there. And it was very homogenous, to be honest. I mean, just lots of people, you know, it sounds bad kind of even saying this, but just lots and lots of white people, middle America, some upper class, you know, people were dressed up to be there. So it was kind of a strange feeling to be there on the day that Trump was inaugurated, because they realized, I mean, you know, the city already had a large number of people coming into it for the Women's March, but, you know, it just didn't seem like that happy of an affair, even for the people who were there for the Trump inauguration. So the next day when I went down to, quote-unquote, the district, as I was told that's how people usually refer to downtown D.C., where things are going on, you know, you could just sense it in the air. I mean, people were starting to flood into downtown, or the district. And I took the metro down to Union Station, and, it was really hard to describe. I mean, there were just so many people that were kind of streaming from all directions, and there was an incredible kind of sea of pink, or at least with the hats, you know. And from the pictures that you were showing of the Madison March and that I'd seen previously, too, I mean, it's just signs, incredibly creative signs, sea of pink, hats, and the energy was just enormous. And just every so often you would hear this, you know, there would be like a cheer, but it wasn't a cheer. And I've got some video, if, I don't know, towards the end or something, or maybe I'll interject or break away from the slideshow at some point to show some video that I took. But these cheers would just rise up out of the crowd. I can't even describe it. But it was women's voices just, and it would spread. I mean, it's kind of like the wave at a sporting event where it would just, you know, it moves from one side of the crowd to the other. And but it was like a sea of women that were just clogging the streets of D.C. And I was very happy to report also that, yes, it was much more diverse than the crowd that you see at the Trump inauguration. But after you got down there, I ended up just going with my camera. I didn't have a sign with me or anything like that because I just felt like documenting it as a photographer for my own purposes. I wasn't photographing for anyone else at that point. I had no plans to meet up with anyone. So I was kind of free to do as I want and just, you know, be part of the masses. what else was I going to say about that? Yeah, so that was kind of liberating, but I really didn't get anywhere in the crowd. I mean, after a while, you just get to a point and you realize, oh, I can't move anymore. And you walk down one little street where you think, oh, it seems there's some movement here. And then after moving about 200 feet, you realize, no, there's no movement there. It's a dead end. You got to turn around and you kind of wobble back to the, you know, going the opposite direction. But, you know, I had, you know, something to preoccupy myself with, and that was mostly taking pictures of people with their creative signs and that type of thing, and kind of enjoying the energy of it. So at one point, I did find myself at the area that was rumored to be where the march was supposed to start. And
a Raging Granny Portland.
I'm sorry.
You just passed a Portland Raging Granny sign.
Oh yes. That was just before I was getting to the area where supposedly the march was starting, and I was clueless. I didn't do my homework ahead of time and find out exactly where the map said the march starts here or there. I just ended up at there were some steel. I don't know. There was some sort of scaffolding or something. It didn't have a sign on it, but supposedly that is where the march was supposed to start. But you couldn't tell that, with the exception of there were a few marshals, parade marshals or something, standing around. But the problem was literally no one could really go anywhere. And that's why nothing kind of kicked off on time. I never got to the point where the stage was supposed to be. I didn't hear any of the speeches or anything like that. But, you know, it was entertaining in and of itself just to be there and to, you know, look at people's signs and share in the energy and just kind of trudge along, you know, for several hours. And I guess things kind of broke up after a while because no one else knew what to do. I mean, you know, we were kind of making our statement by virtue of just having almost a million people descend on D.C. and clogged the streets, and, you know, we knew even before things officially started, this is completely, you know, we're outnumbering the number of people who came to watch Trump be inaugurated, regardless of what Sean Spicer says. Largest inauguration being viewed ever, period, or whatever, you know, with those silly press conferences and, you know, backlash that happened after that. And, of course, the Park Service released their, you know, snapshot or overview of the crowd size from the inauguration and then cleverly posted one that showed Obama's 2009 inauguration. And, so I don't know. There's just a lot of energy that came from that. So I'm not sure exactly where I am. I can put these online, and if people, I'll send Bob you an email, and you can share the link if anybody wants to look at the pictures online. But it really was amazing, just the creativity of the signs and the energy. Oh my gosh, I'm like not even a third of the way through the pictures. I mean,
have you already gone around once?
No.
I don't think so. No, this is,
This is the first time.
Yeah, I think this like changes images every 2 seconds or something like that. There are like 260 images that I saved and brought here today. I ended up taking over 600, but obviously I knew you didn't want to see everything. But and mostly it's just pictures of signs. I mean, and almost everyone is different. So I mean, yeah, I mean it's just the number of people and the volume, and it really was something else. The creativity. I can go ahead here if you want. I've also got video that I can show that I took. I did that in part because when I was there and people were filing away from the inauguration the day before, I just thought it would be interesting to capture what the crowd looked like, not in, you know, a heavy-duty editorial sort of way, just like these are the people who attended this event. And then I took a video that was about the same length of the people who attended the Women's March. And, you know, you see a real difference in demographics, and, you know, it's kind of striking in that way. And the energy was just different. One thing that kind of pleasantly surprised me, I was going to look this up before I came and I didn't get around to it, but I don't know if anyone caught the press conference where Sean Spicer kind of was sarcastic towards a reporter when she was asking him a question about Russia. April, I can't remember her last name, in any case. At one point he got kind of short with her because she was disagreeing with him visibly because she was shaking her head. And she's like, and Sean Spicer's like, don't shake your head. And so, anyway, that kind of caused a kerfuffle that the media covered and stuff. And she actually ended up getting a position with CNN to be a commentator or reporter for them then. So anyway, I found as I was going through the pictures, it's like, oh my gosh, I got her in front of my lens, but I didn't realize it at the time. And she's just sitting on like, she's sitting on something along the side of the street and she's texting and smiling. And so it's just kind of interesting. It's like, oh my gosh, I photographed her.
She wasn't famous yet.
Yeah, well, not at that point. So, yeah, and let's see. Gosh, there's so many pictures here.
Well, what was she famous later?
Forgetting.
For asking the question.
Yeah, the
teacher jumping on her.
Yeah.
Well, Spicer was lying, basically, and she was shaking her head no.
Well, then he said something sarcastic, like, you know, if the president had Russian dressing on his salad, people would be asking him about that. And,
I see the cheesehead.
Oh, yeah, there was a woman from Wisconsin. I don't know who she
was.
How
many drove with you? Have anybody else with you?
I did it on my own. I thought I'm just going to catch up on some books on CD that I haven't had a chance. You know, it's
good deal.
Yeah, I know it's not very earth friendly, perhaps, to just be driving myself, but I kind of felt like I wanted some time to myself. So.
Were you watching TV while you were driving?
I'm sorry.
No.
He's being sarcastic.
Oh, I didn't. Okay. But, so I did stay overnight. On the way down there, I ended up pulling off the, well, not, but I found a hotel, you know, at like 3 a.m. in South Bend, Indiana, because I just realized, okay, I'm just being stupid if I push myself that hard. And, you know, I'm probably not the safest driver at this point either. But, that was... one of those times where I wish I kind of knew where I was going because it was not a nice hotel. But anyway, it was safe, but yeah, it was not, I don't know. I didn't pay
very much. You were there for the luxury, you were there just to get
for the bed.
A few weeks.
Well, I was kind of wishing that they had sheets on the bed, actually, but they did not.
Oh my gosh.
It was very strange.
That is strange.
Yeah, and it's somehow affiliated with kind of a big hotel chain. I found this out afterwards when I was checking out. So I felt safe, I guess, but, you know, it really was like one of those places where had I planned a little bit better or something or driven a little further, I maybe could have had a hotel bed that... At least, okay, I should say it had a sheet over the mattress. It did not have another sheet to go under the blanket. That was kind of unusual. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I just kind of, anyway, I got a nap in my clothes.
On your way out to D.C. when you were traveling, did you talk to any people about the upcoming march and, you know, like, did they vote for Trump or did they vote for Hillary and...
You know,
kind of stuff on your way out there.
It's kind of the thing that I wish I would have planned a little bit better to allow for more time or something like that, and I didn't. I really didn't. I thought I'll take it in visually, or I don't know. It was kind of a last minute decision, and at the time I just. The last time I drove that stretch, or I wasn't the driver for most of it, but was like 35 years ago almost, when I was going to a conference with a friend in Washington, D.C. And honestly, like, my pattern of travel is I fly places, and truly these parts of the country are flyover country to me and to so many others of us. But yeah, I didn't plan very well to like actually, you know, sit down in cafes and try and chat people up or anything like that. So it was pretty limited. But just visually, it was kind of interesting to even visually take in other parts of the country that I never see at ground level otherwise.
Okay, visually, what did you see that, you know, had some effect on you, positive or negative?
Going through kind of the Gary, Indiana area, you know, that's very different. It's very industrial. It doesn't smell as bad as I remember it the last time I had driven through there. But yeah, you know, when you see the houses of, you know, the ones that you can in a larger city from a highway, you realize this is how other people live and their environments are not very pretty and they don't look like Madison largely at all. I mean, I'm sure there are nice parts. Actually, when I drove back to Wisconsin, I drove through South Bend again because it's home of Notre Dame, and I thought, oh, that would be interesting to see. So I pulled off and I just drove around the campus of Notre Dame, however you want to say it. And, you know, it's like, okay, well, South Bend does have some nice parts, but it's also got some incredibly poor and not very nice parts, where I found that first hotel room. And other parts of, let's see, I decided that I definitely had a preference for Ohio rest stops compared to Indiana rest stops. Like, there's a visible difference between how well kept the states are in terms of well, like I said, rest stops or highways, you know, things just seem better taken care of in Ohio, in Ohio. Pennsylvania was interesting too, and, you know, again, it's like I tend not to think of the kind of industry that these parts of the country have or what their economies are based on. And, you know, so of course, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, if I was going through kind of an urban area you know, it was much more rural and some parts forested, and it kind of made me think about, you know, how Pennsylvania does, or in the past has depended more on things like mining, and, you know, it was more food for thought. I guess I did actually look up a Facebook friend of mine in Pittsburgh because he always posts interesting things, and I just stopped by to say hi. He has a law firm, and it's in a part of Pittsburgh that, actually it's a suburb of Pittsburgh, but, you know, most of his clients are people who aren't very well-to-do, and he provides them reasonable legal services, and so it was kind of fun looking William up, or Bill, He also has a hairless rat terrier that he posts a lot of pictures of. And having never met a hairless rat terrier, that was part of my excuse. It's like, oh, I love your dog. He's so cute. I've never seen a hairless rat terrier. But I happen to know that Bill also shared my political views. And he's like one of my Facebook friends who is willing to put things out there. And he's willing to state his opinion about politics, which, you know, these days, I think that's important.
What direction does he live from Pittsburgh out?
That's north, I think. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, because the highway, I'm trying, see here I'm hard-pressed to tell you which highway I was on. Does 90 go down there? I don't know.
No.
Okay, all right, yeah, all right. So,
oh my goodness. It's 80, isn't it? Yeah.
Kaid goes to the northern part of Pennsylvania.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm just going to, yes, 80, thank you. It was 80. I'm going to back up here briefly. Well, actually, I'll just point out real quickly. This is one thing, as things were breaking up, people started to file all over the place. I'm somewhat familiar with DC and National Mall, but I wasn't paying attention to where I was going. But suddenly I found myself in front of the Trump Intercontinental Hotel, everybody was leaving their signs there, which was awesome.
Interesting.
So
you had a picture.
You probably charged the government to clean it up.
You had a picture earlier that showed a overpass and an underpass,
yeah.
And both the overpass and the underpass were full of people.
Yes.
That's an amazing picture.
Yeah. There were so many. I mean, too, I didn't get around to processing these images until, like, not too long ago, literally, like, very in the last 48 hours, okay? But, you know, I just burned them onto a drive, and it's like, I'll look at these later.
That's cool.
Yeah, so this is kind of like, which avenue is that? I can't remember, but you look up one part of it and like the Capitol is right at the end of it. And and these are like my closing images. So like I'm walking back to the metro station and those are like the last two shots I took there. And then it starts over. But I'm sorry?
The wonderful photographs.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. They're okay. I mean, I didn't spend a lot of... If I were to do something like to turn over to a magazine, these would require more work, but it gives an overview, so... But, yeah, so keep resisting. I can show videos if you want. I can upload these to a website, too, if anybody wants to go back and look at them in greater detail on that.
I can post the link on the Humanist Past Events page, if you want to.
Okay. All right, yeah, they're not uploaded yet. And then, too, I've got a couple of videos, like I said, that I shot where you kind of get that sense of energy and you hear one of those big whoops or cries that kind of grows out of the crowd and then it spreads. And also, there was something maybe on CNN that I caught or something that also documented that really well, but from up higher, like somebody was filming from on top of one of the buildings, big buildings there, and it really is mind-boggling. I mean, yeah, a lot of energy, and I hope people have taken that home and continue, you know, with that wherever they are.
Did you leave Washington, D.C. the next day, or did you stay around to see what the day after effects of, were there people still mingling in D.C. and, you know, that kind of stuff, or...
Let's see, the next day I spent a fair amount of time with a person who was hosting me through Airbnb just because she was interesting company and being a young writer, she thought she could use a photo shoot for herself. So I, you know, was happy to obligate her or, you know, to oblige her there. And so if you want to see pictures of Fatima, who's absolutely gorgeous, I can show you those too.
But how neat to have that.
Yeah, I mean, we're Facebook friends now. I hope to visit her again in the future. If you need a reasonable place to stay in D.C., let me know. I'll refer you there.
Is she Muslim, or is she not religious?
She actually is Muslim, and it was, we'd never talked about it much directly. I think I just flat out stated at some point I happen to be a non-believer, you know, I'm an atheist, and I've been to Washington, D.C. before for atheist causes, but emphasizing separation of church and state, and she understands that. I mean, she's very well educated, and but she herself is practicing Muslim, and I walked in on her by mistake for a moment when I wanted to get to the bathroom, which you have to go through her bedroom, and she was actually praying at that point. And it's like, oops, but you know, it was no big deal. But yeah.
So does she wear the hijab? Or?
No.
Okay.
No, she dresses like the rest of us.
Okay.
Did you ask her why she didn't wear a hijab?
No, I didn't feel like going there.
I'm not sure that the hijab is cultural more than religious.
Mm-hmm.
So it depends
yes.
on which
yeah.
culture
yeah.
you've come out of.
Yeah, but you said she was from Pakistan.
Yeah, and I don't. Yeah. Do the Pakistanis wear hijabs? They don't do that.
Well, because they don't wear burqas, but
they do the hijab. Yeah, I think they do the hijab. Yeah.
Yeah, she. I mean, she, let's see, after she graduated, I guess, high school or the equivalent thereof in Pakistan, she had applied to the University of Pennsylvania, so she did her undergrad there and then I believe got a master's or did some amount of schooling at Columbia in New York. And she actually, she was hoping to get an internship at Reuters. She had just applied for one at the time I was visiting there, and a month later she found out she got it. So she's got a summer internship with Reuters.
Wow.
She's written articles for Foreign Policy magazine. And so, I mean, just really incredibly intelligent.
And work her way up to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
So she's doing predominantly political writing then?
Yeah.
For opinion?
Mm-hmm.
Good.
Yeah.
We need more.
Yeah, and to keep us informed here in the West, too. I mean, what she's covering is refugees and so on. And oh, yes, yes, I can. I actually mentioned it to him, you know, because I got close enough to the sign maker. It's like, oh, you're a Raging Granny. We've got Raging Grannies back home. I've got to take a picture of you, so.
Very good.
Solidarity, Raging Grannies.
Yay. Did anybody ask you if you were from some organization, any, like, a newspaper or something like that? Did anybody stop and ask you? Or
actually, at the very end, someone who's affiliated with the organizers of the Women's March said, did ask me who I was with, because I had a big camera, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And so I should actually upload these images and let her know they're available, because she was interested too for historical purposes. Like, there wasn't any reason, she said, to get them to her like in the next 48 hours, mm-hmm. but for historical purposes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and the signs actually that got delivered to Trump's hotel there, that's an interesting story too. I guess the Smithsonian or one of the history museums or someone was collecting the signs for historical archiving to show. Yeah, so.
It belongs in his library.
I know.
Well, that's neat that they actually were preserving some of them. I mean, that is history.
Yes.
It is.
Yeah.
That is neat. I like that.
Yeah.
You've shown a lot of those pink hats. I have a niece in Ohio who was knitting pink hats and sent a bunch of them to D.C. with somebody.
Oh, nice.
To give away.
Nice. Yeah, I kind of almost wanted one afterwards. I mean, I'm not a big hat wearer, but, you know, I thought, gosh darn.
Looks a little
tough and hairy.
I didn't have one because I had my granny hat.
Yeah.
So I don't have good use
if
for it.
If you want one, I have in the car.
Yeah. Really?
I'll make you a hat if you need one. I've already got some made. She wants one, they're out of the trunk.
Well, so you got
extra in the trunk.
I may take you up on that, just for the memento. You know, like I said, I'm not a big hat wearer normally, but if there's another march, like at the one-year anniversary or something,
that's
and it's actually cold. Like,
well, they're still going to work, because I've seen, there have been things that have gone on with the Pink Hats. I don't think as long as he's in office,
I think
the Pink Hats are going to go away.
I think the Pink Hats are here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Here to stay, at least, like you said, for the next 4 years.
Oh, no. I saw some at the Science March, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions for Ingrid or for Barbara while she's still here? Well, thank you very much for
this great
invitation.
Sure thing.
Thanks
for
going translating some of people going out and actually voting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, they said the problem was not that there were so many more people voting Republican, it was that a lot of the Democrats didn't get out and vote. If they had had the same turnout as they had had, if the same people that voted for Obama had voted, they would have won.
Not only that, I mean, we have, America has one of the lowest voting averages in voting countries.
Yes,
We failed
them. Aren't
so
very good.
Put down that as a civic duty to get out and vote.
Yeah.
Well, we make it so easy.
There's so many crazy things with this election. It's kind of difficult to say what it was exactly because I think there were just lots of factors.
Yeah.
The other thing is when you live in Madison, Wisconsin, you have a different perspective on things than other parts of the country.
Yeah, it's very true.
Well, there's arch conservatives who think it's a civic duty to go out and vote too, so it's not political. I think it's
seen
to go out and vote.
One thing Amy Goodman said yesterday was that Donald Trump understood the media better than the media understood themselves.
Yeah.
You want to get the
There's some truth to that. I mean, when I think about just how he blindsided everyone, I mean, and even now you can't keep up with the news. I mean, it's one outrageous thing after another. And, you know, it's like, gosh, I think a week ago we were concerned about North Korea. Have we even heard about that since last week? So.
No, now the leader is being praised.
Oh, right, yeah, he's a smart cookie. Oh, man.